Well, we couldn't end the Aretha Franklin music quite yet. Welcome, everyone, to a Juno Afternoon for this Wednesday. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and Aaron Elmore will be with us in just a moment to talk about Theater in the Rough's new and latest production. Also going to be talking to Mary Ellen Arvold. She's one of the women of distinction recognized by AWARE, and we'll talk to her about her many accomplishments and about the honor. I'm sure she's very happy about it. Keith Levy and Hannah Siebold will be here to talk about Success In and Out, and Read Across America is happening. Julie Leary will be here to talk about it, and Jeffra and Jake from Eagle Crest will talk about the Eagle Crest, the ski report, snow conditions, and all the great stuff. The snow conditions have been amazing the past week, and we'll be talking about that and all the stuff that's coming up this weekend at Eagle Crest. Snow and rain is in the forecast down here at sea level, so snow accumulation coming up to about an inch for today, and heaviest amounts above 600 feet, of course, with highs around 38 degrees today. Tonight, rain and snow again in the forecast with an accumulation up to 2 inches, and snow level again 600 feet, decreasing to 200 feet late in the evening. Lows around 33 degrees. Rain and snow for tomorrow as well. Snow at the higher elevations above 700 feet, and rain down here at sea level. Rain and snow in the forecast as well for Thursday night, Friday, and Friday night. That's kind of the extended forecast, too. Not a big surprise. A lot of rain, a lot of snow happening around here, and that's all good news for Eagle Crest. Well, welcome to Juno Afternoon. We're going to hear from National Native News next.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A retired Canadian Supreme Court justice says there's a crisis in Ontario's justice system when it comes to Native people. He says First Nations are overrepresented in the courts and prisons, but underrepresented on juries. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Retired Judge Frank Iacobucci warns that the issue threatens relations between First Nations and non-Aboriginals. He says the lack of representation of First Nations people on juries is a serious problem.
If we have imperfect procedures and lack of representation, it's unfair just by that alone, but more seriously, errors can be committed that are unintentional.
The Ontario government asked Iacobucci a year and a half ago to investigate the issue, especially after procedures ground to a halt over the lack of on-reserve Aboriginals on juries. Iacobucci says he found a state of conflict between the justice system and the ideologies and approach of First Nations. He says Aboriginal people experience systemic discrimination when it comes to criminal justice or child services and the courts. He says access to justice, the administration of justice, the availability and quality of legal services, the treatment of First Nations peoples in the system, all are lacking in Northern Ontario. First Nations leaders called Iacobucci's report an important first step in dealing with the issue. Alvin Fiddler is the Deputy Grand Chief of the Anishinaabe-Aski Nation.
I hope that this is a significant first step towards fixing the justice system as a whole and to begin to ensure that it works for all.
Iacobucci makes 17 recommendations, including providing cultural training for all government officials who connect with First Nations. He also says officials should pull the addresses and names of potential jurors from more databases, and he wants the jury questionnaire amended to be more appropriate for First Nations people. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A conservative nonpartisan group is accusing the Bad River Tribe of federal water violations. The report comes as the full state Senate is set to vote on a controversial iron ore mining bill. Wisconsin Public Radio's Mike Simonson reports.
The group called Media Trackers says the Bad River Tribe is guilty of, quote, massive Clean Water Act violations, unquote, at its wastewater treatment plant. Bad River is championed protecting Lake Superior from a proposed open-pit iron ore mine in the nearby Pinoki Hills. Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says they self-reported violations to the EPA and have invested $1.6 million in the past 2 years to fix those violations.
And that's far different than dealing with groundwater, aquifer poisoning, and sulfuric acid mine drainage that we stand opposed to. The linkage that is trying to be made for political gains here on the mining issue is absolutely sickening.
In an email response to Wisconsin Public Radio, the EPA says they've been working with Bad River to improve operations at the wastewater plant. While still not in full compliance, they say discharge quality has improved and violations have been resolved. Media Tracker's spokesman Brian Sikma in Milwaukee says the release of their report is not politically timed.
But unfortunately, it wasn't until the past couple of days that all this information became available through the Freedom of Information Act request, and the EPA finally confirmed some of the data to us. So the scheduling is simply a matter of trying to get to the bottom here and dealing with government agencies that were taking their time in getting back to us.
Whether it was politically motivated or not, Republican State Representatives Severson and Klenke put out a news release citing the report and touting the iron ore mining legislation. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
On this day in 1973, Oglala Lakota people and followers of the American Indian Movement seized and occupied the town of Wounded Knee, South Dakota on the Pine Ridge Reservation. They called on the federal government to honor treaties. The incident drew international attention as it turned into a 71-day standoff with federal agents. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick, Click, Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Well, listen to that song file just mess up on us, Aaron. Wasn't
that nice?
So perfect. It was the Smiths with Shakespeare's Sister, and it's just not working correctly.
Gracious.
That is a disappointment.
It's a Juno afternoon.
It's not that. We're not performing surgery here.
No, this is not rocket science, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not rocket surgery.
This is live radio.
Hey, I'm here with, this is Andy Klein, and I'm here with Aaron Elmore now, who's with, of course, Theater in the Rough, and you have a new play called Equivocation. There's a little something weird about you being here this week. Let's just talk about it now.
There's a bit of a hiccup.
You had to reschedule opening night,
yes,
right?
Yes, we were originally to open this Friday evening, or first Friday is a nice celebratory time to open a play. We're thinking we'd be ready. This past week, however, one of our actors, due to circumstances beyond control, just had to bow out, and so we've decided to push the opening off. Katie and I have strode in, and we're going to take over roles. Actually, she's taking over the role that I was taking. Little gender switch there.
Okay. And Shakespeare, after all.
That's Shakespeare, after all. They're all used to that. And I'm going to be taking over the role that was vacated. And so having made those adjustments, we're going to be ready to open on the 8th of March instead.
And I just kind of messed up there. It's not actually Shakespeare, but it's about Shakespeare.
Ah, yes. Right. Very good. So one of the things we love about Shakespeare's plays is they are the whole package. We get incredible rich language. We get incredibly human issues, rich characters, and a very sort of theatrical world in which you see a lot of the backs and fronts of our lives and reflections of how we live and who we are and how we relate to one another. And this play, Equivocation, was written by Bill Kane, not Bill Shakespeare, and much more recently, sometime around 2009 is the version that we've got. And it is about Shakespeare, and it, too, is the complete package. How we got connected to this is an interesting story in itself and a reflection of Juno's theater community. Art Roach of Perseverance Theater saw this production at the original stage, at the arena stage, and he loved it and thought, Theater in the Rough ought to do this. And he sent us a script, and I thought, okay, well, Art, fine. And I read the doggone thing, and wow, and he was right. So here we are now. And so we sort of thought, we did this in conjunction with our previous production of Macbeth very purposely. The story of Equivocation is really about why the first production of Macbeth happened. It's a fantasy on that idea, but the play Macbeth has the term equivocation in it. It deals with that particular thing and the whole idea of what the real question you may be asking is and how we interact with those kinds of issues. And it's also a tremendously rich theatrical experience. The fun of the whole thing, of course, is that they're sort of writing this play, which eventually becomes Macbeth. But it starts out, he starts writing is called The True History of the Gunpowder Plot.
Okay.
As you're getting a little deeper. Though, I don't know, maybe some people may remember V for Vendetta, remember the 5th of November, and gunpowder treason and plots. Whole idea was that at some point on the 5th of November, a man named Guy Fawkes was apprehended in the basement of Parliament, or was it in a tunnel underneath Parliament? He was apprehended with 36 barrels of gunpowder, whole lot of explosive power, which would have blown the building sky high.
Mm-hmm.
And they apparently caught him, and they tortured him and eventually killed him and about 12 of his close friends. That's the story. That's the legend. And to this day, there are images of Guy Fawkes created by kids around the British Isles, and he's burned in effigy, and it's a wonderful kind of a fete, and they get to go to people's houses and ask for money and all that sort of stuff. It's great stuff. Build a national legend on this kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
All that we really know about what happened on that fateful night and in the events around that is that whatever it was that happened, this version of the events can't possibly be true. There's never been any archaeological evidence of a tunnel that was excavated under Parliament or any shoring up and the practicalities of that.
And sneaking in that many barrels.
High explosive weapons of mass destruction, say. Not that likely. So what the writer Bill Kane did was sort of take that as a jumping off point. And sort of explore the whole idea of, okay, what would have happened if Shakespeare had been commissioned by the British government at that time to write a play around these current events? First of all, that's something Shakespeare never did. He always wrote about old-fashioned times or complete fantasies or something like that. So taking that idea as a jumping-off point, here is Shakespeare and his company face-to-face with this modern issue, and how do they write it? So he writes a script, and they start to find, as they play it out, that this really wouldn't have worked and couldn't possibly have happened. Well, the fun for the audience watching this production that will open on the 8th of March, our production, is that what you get to see is a couple of people interacting, and you think, okay, this is, you know, two people in real life, quote unquote, talking to one another, and then suddenly they pull scripts out of their pockets and they say, what do you think of that scene? Didn't really work for me. So then you suddenly realize you weren't really watching a scene in real life. You were watching a couple of actors rehearsing
play within a play,
which is lots of fun.
Yeah.
So to reflect that, we've, you know, replicated some of the beams in McPheeters Hall, and we brought them onto stage, and we've, you know, sort of surrounded and made it a Globe Theater out of theaters, which has been what we've been thinking about all along.
Well, tell me a little bit about that, because one of the things that's really fun about Theater in the Rough Productions is how you always manage to kind of transform that space and play with that space. It's something that's very much part of the creative process of the way you guys do plays. So tell me a little bit about some of that. You were saying that because of this play within a play, and because these different people within this play have these different roles, you have an actual transparency element to the play.
We had a need to be able to have a backstage area, quite practically speaking. So we have a place to pile up our paper and put away the chairs and all that sort of thing. But we also needed to be able to see to see people backstage ready to enter into a production which was happening in front of the audience. And we played around with a couple of ideas, like turning the whole thing 180 degrees, and we've done something similar to that in a production of Cyrano. But this time it seemed nice to just have the curtains that sort of wall off the backstage have a translucency. So you use this thing called scrim. So you light it from the front, it's pretty much opaque, and if you light it from the back, it's pretty much translucent. You can see right through it. So we had a lot of fun being able to do that interplay back and forth with sort of layers of reality that reflect the layers of reality that you get to see on stage.
Yeah, very cool. So that's that part of it, plus the idea that it's this first production of this would have been in the rehearsals of this would have been in the Globe Theater in London.
Yes, indeed.
And so that idea of having the columns and all that kind of transports you to that time as well.
And also being able to say that, well, this is also sort of the beginnings of the, you know, why the production that we just did, Macbeth, happened, and I thought, you know, for people who've seen Macbeth, they'll be able to come and watch this and think, oh, okay, I recognize that line. Ooh, I see where you got that idea. And if you haven't seen Macbeth, it's still a whole lot of fun. It's a tremendous sort of mystery story and this kind of whodunit kind of thing that goes along with it.
And the general idea is that the play ends up not really being able to be written. It just turns into Macbeth,
Macbeth, but it also turns into be this kind of wonderful veiled indictment of this particular minister and all the ideas that they tried to get him to write to be a propaganda story. He turns on their head.
Right.
He gets back at him.
And though it was originally scheduled to open this weekend, it's actually opening next weekend.
That's correct.
So tell the dates and how people can get tickets and things like that.
Right on. We'll be running it from the 8th to the 24th. There'll be a free preview on the 7th of March. There'll be two Sunday matinees, but we are only going to run it 3 weeks. At least that's the plan right now. So we'll be closing on the 24th on that Sunday. And tickets are newly for us available on the Vendini system.
Hey,
so you can get them just about anywhere you like with that sort of thing, any bookstore and also at the Jack, etc. So that's a big cultural move. Nancy DeCherney, wonderful leader. Yay, yay, go Nancy, has been long saying, why in the world don't you guys do this? And here we are, so we're doing it.
So jahc.org is a real convenient place to
go. Yes, it
is.
You can also go to theaterintherough.org and get a leap off of there to our to where you can get tickets.
Very cool. All right, Aaron Elmore from Theater in the Rough. That's Equivocation, and it opens next week on Friday of next week.
Yes, indeed. Yep,
and
fantastic.
Good luck with it, Aaron. And let's preview it. You'll be back next week on Juno Afternoon
we'll
to talk about it as you near opening night.
Precipitously, yes. We'll see you then.
Very good. See you then. Well, the Women of Distinction, recognized by AWARE, is an annual presentation that people just look forward to. It recognizes great women in our community. We have a couple of them right now. We have Mary Ellen Arvold. Mary Ellen, congratulations as a Woman of Distinction this year, nominated by AWARE.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today. And Sarah Lynn Tabachnik is here from AWARE.
Thank you.
Sarah Lynn, how you doing?
Good.
Well, so tell me, I know it's a little embarrassing. We're going to talk about you now, like you're not here almost, Mary Ellen. But tell me why Mary Ellen was someone that you thought about as a person that should be recognized as Woman of Distinction, how that nomination process, how all that happens.
Sure. We say to the community, please look at our website. Please nominate women in our community who are doing great things, because we know there are many.
A bunch, yes.
And they're often unsung sheroes, people just going about their lives day by day, who are doing deeply important work. And we get nominations from the community. The board of directors looks at those kind of the end of summer, early autumn, and chooses four of the women. And of course, here we are.
Here we are.
Mary Ellen.
Ellen's one of them. Yeah, yeah. It must be a fun process, but also like a tough process to kind of choose four out of the list of, I'm sure every single person nominated has great reasons why they were nominated.
You're absolutely right.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So
it's a challenge.
So Mary Ellen, I know you because you're my daughter's pediatrician assistant,
nurse practitioner,
right? And so I'm sure that happens to you all the time where people say that and adults walk by you and say, I remember you, right? That must be happening to you all the time.
It's a very fun part of being in a community for a long time. I've been doing it for 33 years in Juneau, and so it's wonderful having generations of families now.
Yeah.
And connecting over long periods.
So is that now happening where your original patients are you're seeing
starting
their
to have children?
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So that
it's
must
such
be
a wonderful part. And seeing them out in the community and watching those children grow up and be involved in drama or sports or whatever. You know,
right.
It's fun.
Yeah. So give people who maybe don't know you, you worked in Dr. Moss's office, but tell me a little bit about some of your work background and then also some of your other interests that you've kind of gotten involved in.
So I moved to Juneau in 1979 and worked with Dr. Ken Moss for 20 years and also worked with Tom McCabe for 10 years, the last 10 years.
Okay, yep.
Simultaneously, I worked with them. And then they decided to retire.
That happens. That happens sometimes, yes.
And when Ken retired, he passed the practice on to me. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, I was a business owner and manager and had to figure that piece out. But fortunately, I have good friends who have some business expertise who helped me out, figure out some of those aspects. And, you know, really, it's been a wonderful process.
Right.
The team that I have right now is fabulous.
Cool.
You know, I just feel so fortunate each day. I love going to work, and you know, everybody who's there really enjoys the work. So,
yeah, it sounds like working here.
Yeah,
that's what working here is like.
Hey.
Everyone loves it.
Same as
same with you.
Right?
Doing good work. Mm-hmm. Right. People are happy. So, and that's way a lot of people might know you as that nurse practitioner. But tell me about some of the things that you've gotten involved with outside strictly of work. I know that one organization is the JUMP organization.
So it's Glacier Pediatrics. I've been working with for 14 years, and then the last 7 years I've been involved in the creation with others of Juno United Medical Providers and Parents, which the short version is JUMP, and it's a behavioral health program for children, adolescents, and their families who need help because tough things are happening in their lives. And so there are therapists, and there's here in Juno, and then there's a psychologist who comes up from Seattle once a month. And there's a Saturday program where the families gather together and talk over what's going on with them. And the kids are there, so the kids are together. And it's a nice integrated component. And then there's therapy available individually as well. So it's a wonderful service for the community, mm-hmm. I feel, because people don't have to pay for the service. So it touches a wide range of people.
Yeah, that's great. Tell me, in your practice as a pediatrician
nurse practitioner,
I see that, but in pediatrics,
yes,
essentially,
yes.
Right, and mostly, what's kind of the most rewarding thing about that work? What is it that sort of is the thing that you know makes you happiest or makes you most rewarded?
Well, really, the deep bond that you develop with people over time, because you're sharing in their lives, which is wonderful. You're hearing their stories, seeing how hard they try in life, and learning their joys and sorrows, and, you know, also getting to know people over generations, and you just kind of know how families work and how what their support system is after a while, and it's wonderful being around children. I mean, what more upbeat deal is there in life than working with families?
Puppy psychologist, maybe.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else. But yeah, no, that's right.
And watching all the stages of development. I mean, it really is. Each time period in life has its joys and, you know, fun aspects to watch. And it's wonderful watching parents just come alive and be so excited. You know, I think once you have kids, there's nothing that you're more passionate about.
Is there a skill as someone that works in that field that you feel is the most important kind of skill? Is there something that you feel like you bring to it that's, you know, that when you train in this area, maybe you're not necessarily taught, but that's something that, you know, kind of a, is there anything like that you can think of that?
Listening. I think it's critical. You know, I think just hearing with your whole heart and being when people may not have all the words to say. And so you have to read between the lines sometimes and ask, you know, more questions, deeper questions, and then the story comes out. And really that's a big part of the connection with people too, I think, is once people can open up and share what's really in their hearts, there's a strong bond. And
it seems like even that even moves on to that jump work as well.
It
that
does.
Idea of really trying to listen, really getting deeper with people so that they feel there's a trust that has to develop.
Right.
But that listening part of it must be a very interesting thing when you're dealing with very small children and trying to diagnose specific illness or specific
pain. You know,
you have
a lot of tools in your bag. You have your vision, your hearing, your touch, and how the child looks. So, you know, you have all your antenna up, and so it's they don't have to say it with words. You can tell when they're stressed, or by how stressed the parent is. That's a big clue. Also, they parents stay pretty calm through a lot of things, and then as things get more worrisome, it shows on their faces and in their being too. And so they're a big clue.
Right, right. Well, Sarah Lynn, tell me a little bit more about the whole program, the Women of Distinction program. I know there's a dinner that's happening, all that kind of stuff. Tell me a little bit about those details.
Right. So we're going to be at Centennial Hall Saturday. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. There'll be a silent auction and beverages that people can help themselves to. Then at 7 o'clock, the program begins, and Catherine Heumann is our MC. Tom Loker is going to be playing piano during the silent auction, and he's also going to accompany Mark Calvert, who's an opera singer, who's also an AWARE staff person, and he's going to sing a song.
Nice.
And then the program will continue. We'll have dinner, and then each of the women speaks for about 7 or 8 minutes about what inspires her. She's first introduced by someone of her choosing, who takes a couple of minutes to introduce.
Yeah.
It's very fun. People get to dress up a little bit. It's heartfelt, tear-felt, wonderful.
I mean, celebrating great people in our community who've done great things. I mean, sounds like a great evening, right?
I mean, it is.
Even for you as someone who's being honored, yes.
Year after year, and I've loved it. It's really one of the highlights of the year.
Yeah.
Good food, wonderful people to visit with, and it's upbeat.
And a great organization, and supporting a great organization.
Yeah, and a great organization, too. Yeah, it's very uplifting, I think. And it's
huge work for our community, AWARE does.
Absolutely. So tickets and things like that, how can people be a part of it?
People want to call AWARE, 586-6623. That's the only outlet for tickets, actually. So we recommend people call.
And how? And the night starts when and where is it and that kind of stuff again?
Centennial Hall.
Okay.
Right. 5:30, doors open. Okay. 7 o'clock, program begins.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's it. It's the Women of Distinction. Can run through the list of the other three women that are being honored as well.
Sure. The other three women are Colleen McKenzie, Jackie Martin, and Kathy Colkhurst Reddy.
Great. And Jackie Martin will be here tomorrow to talk with us as well.
That's right.
Here on Juno Afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Ellen Arvold, thanks so much for coming in. And congratulations.
Thank you very much, Andy.
I very much support this nomination.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear it.
Very much. I'm behind this one 100%. No controversy here. And that's the Women of Distinction Saturday dinner and presentation. It's all happening, and it's all a benefit to AWARE. So contact AWARE for tickets to that, and it's a great evening, as you were saying. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 27th of February, 2013. The birthday of the novelist John Steinbeck, Salinas, California, 1902. His most productive decade was the 1930s. He wrote the novel Tortilla Flat, set in Monterey, California, in dubious battle about fruit pickers on strike in a California valley, of mice and men, set on a ranch in Soledad, just southeast of Salinas, the story of the farm worker Lenny and his friend George, which was a big success and also a book which has been banned in many places. And then Grapes of Wrath came out in 1940, after which Steinbeck worked as a journalist in the 1940s, first as a war correspondent from the Mediterranean and North Africa in World War II. And after the war, he took trips to the Soviet Union, to Moscow, Kiev, Stalingrad, and out-of-the-way places in the Soviet Union, tried learning Russian, published his notes in 1948 in a book, A Russian Journal. East of Eden came out in 1952, and then Travels with Charlie, 1962. And in the same year, John Steinbeck won the Nobel Prize for Literature. When a reporter at a press conference asked if he thought he deserved it, he said, frankly, no. And afterwards, Steinbeck was worried about the effect of the Nobel Prize on him as a writer. He said, I don't remember anyone doing any work after receiving the prize except maybe George Bernard Shaw. The Nobel Prize has, in effect, amounted to an epitaph. And as it happened, John Steinbeck died 6 years later, not having published a book after winning the Nobel Prize. His masterpiece, The Grapes of Wrath, in which he wrote, the cars of the migrant people crawled out of the side roads onto the great cross-country highway, and they took the migrant way to the west. And because they were lonely and perplexed, because they had all come from a place of sadness and worry and defeat, and because they were all going to a mysterious new place, a strange thing happened. The 20 families became one family. The children were the children of all. The loss of home became one loss, and the golden time in the West was one dream. John Steinbeck, who said, the writer must believe that what he is doing is the most important thing in the world, and he must hold to this illusion even when he knows it is not true. Here's a poem for today, a poem by John Keats. When I have fears that I may cease to be. When I have fears that I may cease to be, before my pen has gleaned my teeming brain, before high-piled books in charactery hold like rich garners the full-ripened grain, when I behold upon the night's starred face huge cloudy symbols of a high romance, and think that I may never live to trace their shadows with the magic hand of chance. And when I feel, fair creature of an hour, that I shall never look upon thee more, never have relish in the fairy power of unreflecting love, then on the shore of the wide world I stand alone and think, to love and fame, to nothingness, do sink. A poem by John Keats. When I have fears that I may cease to be. Here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues, subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, keep in touch.
And welcome back to a Juno afternoon, where the forecast is calling for surprise rain. Snow level up to 700 feet. Rain for tonight as well, with lows around 33 degrees. And rain and mixed with snow is in the forecast for the next few days here. Rain down here at the sea level and snow up above 700 feet. That's all good for Eagle Crest. And we'll be talking to Jeffrey and Jake later in the program here today during the Eagle Crest Ski Report. Right now, Keith Levy is with me. Keith is a district court judge. And Keith, you're part of the Success Inside and Out program that happens over at Lemon Creek and deals with folks who are kind of just about to get out and thinking about how to deal with probation and how to deal with having a successful reentry into society. So tell me a little bit about this program. I know you've been doing it for about 6 years, right?
Right. Yeah. We've been, it's a joint operation of the Alaska court system and the Department of Corrections. We do it out at the jail. We have participating about 45 inmates each year who are close to release or within a year of release. And the idea is to have a kind of a professional conference to provide them with resources and some skills to help deal with to integrate into the community when they're released.
Do you actually go through skill building during the day, or is it more like here's the resources and that kind of thing?
Well, maybe a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I mean, there will be about half the day, there will be 8 concurrent sessions going on, and the inmates sign up for 4 of these generally. So the kinds of things you'll see are there'll be an employment table. People come in from the community who are who can offer jobs, help people learn how to get jobs, an education table, housing, food, and then there's a table on spirituality. There's a fitness table that I've been involved in over the years, and a variety of other things. And so some of it will be just resources. Here's who you call. And some of it is practical things. For example, we have bankers come in and explain how to open a bank account.
Sure.
Things like that.
Because I'm sure for a lot of people who've maybe been incarcerated for a long time, some of this stuff is things they haven't had to or haven't had an opportunity to do for many, many years.
I think that's right.
Yeah. All these different things are offered. Is there one that you notice in the past that people have kind of gravitated towards, has been a more popular one of the things that that you find that inmates are interested in?
I think the ones that get the most, and the inmates sign up for the specific ones that they're interested in, and the ones that get the most participants are probably the life's necessities, so the banking, that we also have some lawyers there to provide advice on civil issues. A lot of them will have custody issues and things like that.
Sure, right.
And then surviving probation. So there'll be 3 probation officers there to talk about, you know, because most of these people coming out of jail will be on probation and how to deal with supervision.
Right. And so that's interesting because you can imagine it must be an incredibly intimidating thing to reenter and to kind of think about. I mean, for the layman's point of view, it'd be like, great, you're out. You know, hey, right. You know, no right. problems anymore, right? But actually, I'm sure that it's kind of like, boy, it must be a huge right. Task to take on.
And considering, you know, I mean, the biggest issue is, frankly, there's a very high recidivism rate, and that's what we're trying to deal with. And probably, you know, there's a lot of information that's conveyed at this conference. Probably the most important takeaway from my perspective is that people know that people in the community do care about these folks succeeding and are there, and the resources are there if they are able and willing to ask or know where to go.
Yeah, that introduction there, and then once they're actually out, they're interacting with some of these same people, some familiar faces, some people that maybe from the bank that they actually dealt with there and that kind of thing. Must be a welcoming face to see.
And we also have, you know, a number of speakers come. We have, you know, retired Justice Carpinetti is going to speak. 2 members of our legislative delegation are going to speak. I mean, it's kind of amazing. We have about 45 inmates. We have at least that many volunteers.
I was going to ask. Yeah. You know. So almost a one-to-one relationship during this conference. How long does it go?
Well, it's all day, pretty much from 9 to 3 on Saturday. And we also have some great entertainment. Colette Costa is going to be there, and
all right.
a few other groups providing entertainment.
Yeah, it sounds like a great day.
No. And probably the highlight of the day is we do a fashion show that Sharon Gateman is the DJ for. And what we do is we have inmates. We actually get people to contribute clothes to help inmates, and there'll be some selected, and they'll wear these kind of in the fashion show to kind of show how to dress for an interview, a job interview, and
sure.
And then there'll be some celebrities who will also be there showing how not to dress for
very
an interview.
Good. Good stuff. Yeah, sounds like a good time, and also sounds like something that's just going to be incredibly valuable for people. Have you had kind of successes in the past? Are there individual successes you can point to and say, boy, because we did this type of program before, people have gotten back to us and let us know that it was really helpful?
I can't, it'd be hard to talk about individual cases, but one of the things we do during the day is we have a panel of people who have either successfully completed probation or who are doing well on probation, and they speak, and I think they're probably the most inspiring speakers of the day because the inmates know them and they can relate to them and they know they've been there.
Yeah, and just kind of giving real life tips about here's how you do it.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, well, it's called Success Inside and Out. It's an all-day-long business conference, essentially. It's in Lemon Creek, so it's a closed business conference, I would say, right? Invitation only.
It's a little hard to get into.
yeah, it's not worth getting into. But it's all put on through the Alaska court system and the Department of Corrections. And if people want to in some way be able to contribute to this or in some way be involved, maybe not even this year, but next year, that kind of thing, how can people get
hold
of it?
You can call me or the clerk of court at 463-4700.
Okay. 463-4700, and that would be even businesses that might want to lend a hand or that kind of thing, or or individuals that feel like they have either a skill or something that they can contribute that would help this effort.
Right.
Something that can the whole community should ring and can get behind, and, you know, making sure that people are successful when they get out of jail. It's an absolutely basic thing that everyone should be able to get behind. Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Keith Levy, District Court Judge. That's once again Success Inside and Out. And thanks so much for coming in.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. To Junior Afternoon, Andy Klein with you. And right now joining me is Julie Leary and Allison Smith, both a librarian and a teacher here with the Juneau School District. And thanks so much for joining me and talking about Read Across America, such a fun program that happens every year. So that's happening this Saturday. It's at the Thunder Mountain High School, right?
This Saturday, March 2nd, from 10 to noon at Thunder Mountain High School Commons.
So for folks who haven't ever been to this, my daughter did it long ago, so I was at it one time long ago, but it's really a fun event to go to.
Yeah. We invite readers from around the community. We've invited some police and firefighters, Coast Guard, to come and wear their uniform and read to kids, so they kind of are... Some local celebrities.
Not Miranda rights. They're not reading.
No.
No. They're reading fun things to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They'll be reading stories and books.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll have a collection of Dr. Seuss and other picture books.
Very cool.
Also, some high school basketball players, maybe some hockey players. There may even be some UAS students that are taking a... children's literature class coming to read with children.
Oh, that's a great connection to have UAS students come in. That's really cool. Yeah.
And every child that attends gets a free book.
All right.
And we have a pretty good selection of books to choose from. I would say our main target audience for that is probably kids in elementary school. We do have a good selection. And then it's kind of neat having the older kids volunteer to be helpers and readers.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of high school people, kids will be there to help volunteer. From JDHS and from Thunder Mountain. And also there'll be some entertainment. Patrick Murphy from Gastineau and his Gastineau Strummers will be there. There'll be a Reader's Theater from JDHS Drama Department. And I think we're having a juggler slash, if there's room, unicyclist coming to participate.
Drummer slash unicyclist?
No. Juggler.
Juggler slash unicyclist. Okay. Well, that sounds all right. They'll happen. It'll be good. It'll add to the excitement. Well, for folks who aren't familiar with it, just describe the, I know this is a national program, Read Across America. It's a national program. So tell me a little bit about kind of the background of the program itself and what kind of the goals and accomplishments are there.
Well, NEA's Read Across America is an annual reading motivation and awareness program that calls for every child in every community to celebrate reading on March 2nd, the birthday of beloved children's author, Dr. Seuss.
So it all starts with Dr. Seuss. I agree with that, too. Right? It all starts with Dr.
Yes.
Seuss.
and basically how it got started is that a group of educators in 1997, a group of educators from the National Education Association, came up with the idea that we have all these holidays that celebrate things. We didn't have a holiday that celebrated reading. And they thought, what a great idea to borrow Dr. Seuss's birthday for that, because he was such an inspiration for writing books that really helped kids learn to read. A lot of The Cat in the Hat was published sort of in response to a lot of the materials for kids to learn to read were boring. And actually, Life magazine published an article saying one of the reasons they thought kids were struggling with reading was because the books were boring.
Just weren't.
Cat in the Hat was sort of a response to that. So, you know, what better role model could you have than Dr. Seuss for encouraging kids and people everywhere to celebrate reading? So
none
that's really
is the answer.
Right,
there's no better model. That's
really how Read Across America came to be.
He really was such a national treasure, wasn't he? I mean, you know, just amazing. I can remember, I even someone my age, I can remember that excitement and that fun, the way reading just felt fun when you picked up a Dr. Seuss book, you know, and it just felt like that was going to be a fun thing to do. And that just then naturally brings you into that whole world that reading opens up for you.
I just read The Cat in the Hat in my class today, and it was neat because the kids could fill in the blank because of the rhyming and the cadence, and they enjoy it because it's silly. But they also, it really targets some skills, some key pieces that they need to have, because the rhyming makes it predictable and helps kids learn to read.
And he had just that gift for not just language, but also for art and for illustration, and that just tied it all together so beautifully. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it's a wonderful start for this whole program.
And I was reading Daisy Head Maisie today, and the second grade class I read it to, they were really, really quiet. They listened the entire time, and then also my second one was Yertle the Turtle, and they were just listening with attention. So that was really good.
Yeah, it's exciting these days to have kids listening with attention, right? Just not distracted by all the other things that our modern world can distract you with. Well, so it's all happening. Tell me about how people can maybe get involved, or is there ways that people can participate or get involved?
Sure. If anybody would like to help out, we do have quite a few helpers at the moment, but you know, set up, clean up, there's always room for more. They could get in touch with me, Julie Leary, at julie.leary@junoschools.org, or just show up 10 to noon and just enjoy it. It is a birthday party, so there's also going to be cake.
Okay.
And the cake, it's been a tradition in Juneau that the cake is sponsored by the Juneau Haynes Reading Council. So they partner with Juneau Education Association to put the event on.
All right, very cool. All right, so it's all Read Across America, as you said, 10 to noon. It's happening this Saturday, Thunder Mountain High School, and just a wonderful celebration of reading, especially early childhood reading. Dr. Seuss started it all, an acknowledgement of that national hero. I mean, let's just call him that.
Yeah.
You know, and a good fun time. And of course, as you just said, free cake. So it's a win-win. It's good, great reading, good books, and free cake.
Right. There's no reason not to come.
There's not a reason not to come. All right. Allison and Julie, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Jeffra and Matt have joined me now from Eagle Crest. How you guys doing?
Hey, good, Matt.
Doing. That's Matt.
That's
yeah.
Matt.
I'm Andy. Well,
we're all doing well.
Everyone's fine. That's good. Good. Just wanted to check in. But you guys are doing great because the conditions have really gotten great up at Eagle Crest. I mean, everything I'm seeing is about how amazing the conditions are up there.
Oh, yeah. Certainly. Monday was spectacular. It just doesn't get much better than it was on Monday.
I saw that in the ski conditions report that Jake puts out. He was like, all right, this is the one. I mean, if you haven't been up here yet, you know, don't miss today.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it must have been pretty crowded up there. You know, it must have been.
Well, I think Mondays are traditionally quiet.
Yeah.
It was the people that were on the mountain. Believe me, there was big grins on everyone's faces. And I got out and made several runs, and it was just fabulous. It's amazing what sunshine will do to you.
Yeah, that's right. It was just a gorgeous day and great conditions. Any indication about what's happening, what's going to be happening for tomorrow, the conditions and stuff?
Well, it looks like we've just been picking up, 1 to 3 inches every night. And I think that's been what's going on for about a week and a half now. And it's really starting to add up and create some phenomenal skiing. So I think if we can do the same tonight, looks like it's snowed up there now. We should be good for the weekend and tomorrow. So
that's certainly the forecast right now. The precipitation is supposed to keep falling. Rain down here at sea level, but snow up above 700 and beyond, 500 and beyond at night. So that's all Eagle Crest territory up there getting snow.
Exactly.
Yes. Just remember, just when it's raining down here, more than likely it's snowing at the mountain, and we have snow, and don't let that rain scare you away.
Yeah, okay. Lots of stuff to talk about, stuff coming up this weekend, stuff coming up next weekend. So for this weekend, a really fun thing is the Town Downhill. Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Certainly. That's it's a race that started last year with the Juneau Ski Club, and they put it on and host the race and set everything up, and it's open to anybody. So it's one of the only race all year that is open to anybody who wants to race. And this year, the race is going to start on the lower part of the Super G run and actually cross over to the face run and then back to Lower Hillary's. So it's got a lot of interesting features in it and a really great course. So it's $10 to register, and registration starts at 9:30 Sunday morning, and the race practice runs at 11, and race goes off at noon. So it's a great race, and like I said, put on by the Juneau Ski Club, and we're happy to host it and
get
everybody
out there. Is it like a slalom, grand slalom combination, of a course downhill thing? Or
Super G.
Okay.
That would be the best if you're familiar with those types of terms, but not a slalom and not a downhill either.
Okay.
So kind of in that middle.
So you have some gates you have to get through, but
exactly.
It's not super crazy speeds. It's
we set it up so everybody can do it, and if you want to push it and get speed, you can find it. But
sure.
At the same time, we don't want it to be unsafe.
Yeah, it's a fun event, but I imagine it gets pretty competitive too, right?
Yeah, like I said, this is our second year of hosting it, so we're hoping it continues to grow.
Right.
And definitely there's competition within the kids groups and then the adults, so I hope to get out there and run it if the day goes well and see how we do.
Everyone wants to see you run it, man.
Yeah. Sure.
All right, so that's the Town Down. Is that Sunday or Saturday?
That's Sunday.
That's
and then
Sunday.
Saturday, we've got another great event in the Women's Yes You Can, and Jeff is certainly
well,
willing to talk
about that. Well, tell me about that, yeah.
Yeah, this is our women's only program that happens all day on Saturday. And this is, I meant to ask Barb Lynn how many years that we've been doing this, but we've been doing it at least the 15th, 18th annual. And we'd like to think of it as a spa day on the mountain for the women.
All right.
So it's a great...
you don't have to go to Vail, man,
no,
right? You don't
no,
have to go to Aspen, right
we,
here.
No,
spa
you can
day.
Actually get a spa day on the mountain at Eagle Crest.
All right.
And the day includes breakfast, lunch, speakers, an après ski. There's all day of coaching. And it's for women who have skied or snowboarded a little bit before. We have had first-timers in there before, and that's a long day for first-timers. So, there's still a little bit of space left, and it's a great day on the mountain, and it's all women instructors. We have our top women instructors that coach this event, and it's one of their favorites.
Yeah, very cool. So, and then there's this other thing that's going on, which is that for those people who didn't get the season passes early on, there's spring passes being offered now. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, starting March, next Thursday, March 7th is when spring passes go on sale. So they're good every day that we're open for the rest of the season, including spring break. So for $199 for adults, it's a great deal, and you only have to ski, five times to pay for it between now and the end of the season. And we know that March can bring lots of snow and hopefully lots of sun as well. So it's a great value if you're new to town and want to get up there a bunch in the spring, or just didn't get a chance to get a full pass, or know that you're going to be off for spring break and up at the hill?
Yeah, it's sort of an old cliche with Eagle Crest, but some of the best skiing is spring skiing all year long. It can be amazing.
Oh, yeah, the days are longer. You know, the lifts are all open till 4 o'clock. And this is a great opportunity for all of these folks that have taken all our Learn to Ski programs during January. And we've gotten them hooked. And
right.
So here's a perfect opportunity to not have to buy lift tickets for the rest of the season.
There you go. You learn. This was the year you learned. And now here you go. Get the spring ticket. You can fit in a whole bunch of skiing by the time the mountain's going to eventually close. We don't like to talk about when the mountain closes.
We got a long ways before
long
the
way.
Mountain closes.
Long way before the mountain closes. So that's happening this weekend. No, next weekend, I get to be involved in the thing. Next week, I'm really excited. It's the High Gravity Games.
Third annual High Gravity Games. And we have some twists on the High Gravity Games this year. So we've tweaked it a little bit, but it's the games. And we've made sure to keep it the games. But there's the Startup Cup, the relay race that has... four different legs. You have to have five people on your team. And then we've got the keg toss and the crash cool dummy. So
always
you got to get going on that crash cool dummy.
You got to start the engineering, the designing. You have to be in. You have to get working on that.
Yeah.
The welding that takes place, all that.
Yep. And we've got information up on our website at skijuno.com on all of those events. But it's going to be pretty fun this year. We're really excited.
For people who don't know, the crash cool dummy is the non-manned the unmanned skier type thing that has to go down the mountain. Furthest one down or fastest one? I can't remember how it's judged.
Fastest one, and then it's judged by, you know, just creativity
building.
Carnage.
Carnage.
Yeah, that helps.
Is a
maximum
big thing.
Carnage.
A couple years ago, we had some major carnage. So last year, we put up bee netting and the whole thing. And it was kind of anticlimactic because it snowed in the track. The dummies wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
so
it was a squall that came in right when when that started off. But hey, you're up on a mountain. But the other one, the relay is fun because the last leg of the relay, of course, is the human dog sled.
Yes.
So that is that's an all hands on deck kind of a moment for the teams.
That is, and it's a great spectator leg as well. And this is in honor of the Iditarod, and we're coming up on the start of the Iditarod. And so this year, there's a new, there's going to be a mandatory layover on that human sled dog. You're going to have to pick up your serum and then actually get your serum to get back to the finish line.
I see.
We've made it a little more challenging because people are getting really good at it.
Yes, but up the ante a little, higher skill level involved, strategy, all that gets involved. I like it.
Yep.
I like it. I get to MC that, so I'm excited about it. But that's good for me to think about now in the MCing. Now that I know that rule's in place, that's a good angle.
Yeah,
to
we've got
there,
some
yeah.
other rules in place too, but can't reveal all of them today.
No, certainly not. All right, well, that's the Eagle. The fun is starting to really ramp up at Eagle Crest. It's great. As the days get longer, it just seems like it gets more and more fun, you know, to be up there. And we're getting great weather, as we often do, as the spring starts rolling around. So Eagle Crest, a great place to be right now.
Yeah, and I think just a reminder that we are open. I had someone ask the other day, is Eagle Crest still open?
What?
I said, absolutely, we're still open. We'll be open through the 14th of April. So got a lot of skiing and riding left ahead of us.
All right, sounds great. Okay, Jeffra and Matt, thanks so much. Get up on the mountain. I know you will. And thanks again for letting us know what's happening up at Eagle Crest.
Thank you.
On my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. The lock upon my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is.
And thanks for joining us on a Juno afternoon today. Andy Klein with you on this Wednesday afternoon. We're going to hear from All Things Considered next. Once again, the forecast for the rest of tonight for rain. Snow level of about 700 feet and some wind gusts this evening up to 35 miles an hour. So bundle up. Thanks again. NPR coming up next with All Things Considered.
I will continue to accompany the church with my prayers.